Chapter 11. Getting Tough. Summer and Fall, 2003. Across the board, U.S. tactics toughened in the fall of 2003. This was natural, even reasonable, coming in response to the increased attacks on U.S. forces and a series of suicide bombing attacks. But it also appears to have undercut the long-term strategy of the U.S. government. What you're seeing here is an unconventional war fought conventionally, a Special Forces Lieutenant Colonel remarked gloomily one day in Baghdad as the violence intensified. Asked later what he meant by that, this officer said that having the U.S. military out in patrols, that is, the presence mission, wasn't in and of itself necessarily stabilizing the situation. And the tactics that the regular troops used, he added, sometimes subverted American strategy. In other words, U.S. forces were fighting hard and might even be able eventually to claw their way to victory, but they were working far harder and less productively than necessary. They were following their training, performing according to doctrine, and busting their hearts to do the right thing, and frequently were sweating and bleeding in ways that didn't help them move toward their strategic goal. They were pounding the square peg of the U.S. Army into the round hole of Iraq, a difficult situation that was hardly their fault. Civilian leaders and top military commanders had failed to define what kind of war was being fought, and publicly had insisted that it was something other than what it was. Seen in this light, the abuses that occurred later in 2003 at the Abu Ghraib prison weren't an anomalous incident, but rather the logical and predictable outcome of a series of panicky decisions made by senior commanders, which in turn had resulted from the divided, troop-poor approach devised months earlier by Secretary Rumsfeld and General Franks. After months of maneuvering, the real war in Iraq, the one to determine the future of the country, began on August 7, 2003, when a car bomb exploded outside the Jordanian embassy, killing 11 and wounding more than 50. The next day, with remarkable timing, the CPA released a public relations document that touted 100 indicators of how well things were going in Iraq. Most of Iraq is calm, and progress on the road to democracy and freedom not experienced in decades continues, the document, posted on the White House's website, blithely asserted in a section titled, 10 Signs of Better Security. Only in isolated areas are there still attacks. In fact, the insurgency was emerging into deadly bloom. While U.S. civilian and military leaders had dithered, letting their policy and posture drift, the enemy had been busy. The initial focus of insurgent attacks wasn't the U.S. military, but allies of the U.S. effort, such as other members of the coalition and international organizations that were perceived as legitimizing the occupation. Beginning in midsummer, General Sanchez found himself fighting a very different war from that waged by the U.S. military in the invasion months earlier. As time went on, it became very clear by the fall, by the November time frame, that they had, as best we could tell, a strategy of attacking the different elements of cohesiveness within the coalition, Sanchez said in a subsequent statement in a legal proceeding. He saw four major thrusts of enemy attacks. They were doing direct action against us. They were attacking the Iraqi security forces as they existed at the time. They were attacking politicians. They were attacking the international community, which was a strike on the Italians, the United Nations, and they were looking to split the coalition. In other words, the insurgents were systematically hitting allies of the U.S.-led effort, turning away from difficult U.S. military targets in favor of softer foreign targets, and in doing so, seeking to peel off support and isolate the U.S. occupation. On August 19, a cement truck laden with artillery shells and other explosives crashed into the outer wall of the headquarters of the United Nations in Iraq on the Canal Road in eastern Baghdad. The blast was so powerful that windows in the camp of the 2nd Armored Cavalry Regiment, about half a mile away, were blown in. It destroyed a corner of the 3-story UN building, killing 22 people and wounding another 70. One of the dead was Brazilian diplomat Sergio Vieira de Mello, the chief of the UN mission, who survived the blast but was trapped inside the rubble and died before he could be freed.